Wayfair's big sale is here. It's Way Day, and it's on now. For 4 days only, score up to 80% off all things home with free shipping on everything. Now through October 29th, score Wayfair's best deals, like up to 80% off area rugs, up to 60% off mattresses, up to 60% off bedroom furniture, and more exclusive doorbuster deals. So build your cart and shop Way Day starting October 26th at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Hey, it's Austin James. If you're like me, trying to live your best life while living with diabetes, you can relate to worrying if you're doing a good job managing your diabetes. I use the FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor to get real-time glucose readings and see the impact of every meal and activity to make better decisions. The FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor can help me live life with diabetes on my own terms, and it gives me more time for the things I love, like being a dad and a musician. Now this is progress. Learn more at FreeStyleLibre.us.
For prescription only, safety info found at FreeStyleLibre.us.
Hello, campus cronies. Welcome back to Campus Crime Chronicles. I'm your host, Dr. Nicole Turner, higher education professional and true crime addict. In every episode of this podcast, I take a deep dive into some sort of true crime that occurred on a school campus or a crime that's associated with a college or university in some way. For each episode, I rate the seriousness of the crime from 1 to 5 on my serious crime scale, with 1 being completely not serious, possibly even a little humorous from time to time, to 5 being very serious. This episode is rated a 5. It was December 2007 when 21-year-old Marshall University student Leah Hickman vanished without a trace in Huntington, West Virginia. As her family and friends desperately searched the city, police launched an investigation into her mysterious disappearance. But 1 week later, the search came to a devastating end. Leah's body was discovered hidden in a crawlspace beneath her apartment building. Nearly 2 decades later, her killer remains unknown, and justice has yet to be served. This episode is titled, Who Killed Leah Hickman? So without further ado, let's get started. Was the only child of Ron Hickman and Sherry Russell. She was born and raised in Leon, West Virginia, near the Ohio River community of Point Pleasant. According to the Mysterious West Virginia YouTube channel, hosted by Carrie Kirk, Leah was a loving, family-oriented young woman who enjoyed music, dancing, and most of all, helping other people. Her father, Ron, said Leah was, quote, just a wonderful young lady. She had a heart to help people, especially older people. She had a heart to help them. She loved animals. She probably would have took every animal if she could. End quote. In high school, Leah played the trumpet in the band, and she played the handbells as a member of the bell choir. She was also involved in sports, and after graduating from Christ Academy in 2005, a small K-12 Christian school in Point Pleasant, Leah was accepted to Marshall University in Huntington, West Virginia, where she began attending classes in the W. Page Pitt School of Journalism and Mass Communications. She aspired to one day become a TV news reporter. So in the fall of 2005, Leah moved to Huntington, but elected to live off campus. So instead of living in the dorms, she moved into an apartment near Marshall University with her half-sister, Jessica Vickers, who was 4 years older than Leah. For the next 2 years, Leah enjoyed life as a college student, and her father, Ron, said she was very happy and content at Marshall. By the fall of 2007, during Leah's junior year, she was excelling in school and working part-time at the Dress Barn, a retail store in Barbersville, which is located about 14 miles away from Huntington. On the morning of December 14th, 2007, Leah had wrapped up her final exams and was planning to head back home to Leon, West Virginia, the next day for winter break. That day, though, on Friday, December 14th, Leah and her sister Jessica went to the mall to do some shopping and browsing. When they returned home, Jessica left to work a shift at her job, and Leah started getting ready for her trip home. You know, packing, laundry, stuff like that. Early in the afternoon, Leah spoke with her mother on the phone. Her mom, Shelley, recalled that Leah sounded eager and excited to go home for break, and her mom noted that nothing seemed odd or unusual. Rather, they planned to check in with each other again a little later that evening. Leah also spoke to her father on this day at around 3 p.m. By then, she had just received her grades for the semester, and she was quite happy with the outcome. Leah's father recalled that she told him she missed him and was looking forward to spending time with him during the break as well. About 30 minutes later, around 3:30 that afternoon, Leah's sister Jessica returned home from work for a short lunch break. She said that Leah was home and was still on cloud nine about how well she had done in her classes that semester, and Jessica said that Leah was in a great mood and was still packing for her trip back home. At around 4 p.m., so about 30 minutes later, Jessica headed back to work to finish her shift, and she recalled that when she left the apartment, she remembered that Leah was there doing the dishes. Unfortunately, though, Jessica had no idea that would be the last time she would see her younger sister alive. According to the reporting of Carrie Kirk on the Mysterious West Virginia YouTube channel, the rest of Leah's evening was accounted for until shortly after 5:40 p.m. The last confirmed contact with Leah was right around 5:40 on December 14, 2007, when Leah called a friend from her cell phone and told the friend that she was grabbing some dinner from McDonald's. This was later determined to be the last call and activity from Leah's cell phone. Although the exact time of her return to her apartment is unknown, we do know Leah made it back home because authorities later found the receipt from McDonald's in Leah's apartment, which had a timestamp of exactly 5:40 p.m. After this, however, Leah seemed to completely vanish without a trace. You see, that night, Jessica spent the night with her boyfriend, so she never returned home after work that evening. However, Leah's mother and two different friends all tried to call Leah that evening, but all three calls went straight to voicemail. By the next day, when Leah's mom tried to call her again, Leah's phone was playing an automated message saying that her voicemail box was full. Almost immediately, Leah's family and friends grew concerned. I mean, she was known for her punctuality and reliability, so her not answering her phone or returning calls was very much out of character for her. Not wanting to panic, though, Leah's mom, Shelley, called Jessica and asked her to go to the apartment to check on Leah and see what was going on. You know, see why her phone was off and why she wasn't answering calls. I mean, surely there was some logical explanation. So Jessica went by their apartment at around 1 p.m. on Saturday, December 15th, and what she discovered was a bit perplexing, to say the least. Jessica noticed that Leah's yellow Chevy Cavalier was parked outside of their apartment. Inside, Jessica found Leah's coat, her purse, her car keys, and even the leftover wrappings from McDonald's, but Leah herself was nowhere to be found. More alarmingly, Jessica also noticed that the nearest door that led to the laundry room in the basement had been left ajar, and Leah's packed bags were still in the same spot where she had left them the day before. So, trying not to panic herself, but not sure what else to do, Jessica took to MySpace, you know, social media platform back in the early 2000s, and posted a message on Leah's page. The message just read simply, quote, "Oh, sister, where are you?" end quote. But when Leah did not show up to work a 5 p.m. shift that day at the Dress Barn on Saturday, December 15th, I guess she was going to work and then head home, but when she didn't show up to work her shift, that's when her family and friends knew that something was incredibly wrong. In fact, Leah's manager at the store later told reporters that Leah was not the type of employee who just didn't show up for work. It was actually quite the opposite, and she would even call if she was going to just be a few minutes late. By Sunday, December 16th, when Leah was still nowhere to be found, her mother called the Huntington Police Department to report her daughter missing. Almost immediately, both local law enforcement and Leah's family and friends jumped into action. As Sergeant John Williams with the Huntington Police Department launched an investigation, Leah's family and friends printed flyers with Leah's photo and information and started passing them out around town. Leah's father, Ron, told WSAZ3, quote, "We went to Huntington and were looking in different areas for Leah. Some friends made up flyers, and we distributed them all over the area while Leah was missing," end quote. Over the next week, multiple volunteers, friends, and family searched for Leah throughout the city. Ron said, quote, "You want to do everything you possibly can do to find out about your child. Some friends and I, we worked Huntington about every day that week, looking over the neighborhood and through the neighborhood, down there and everything," end quote. Marshall University also held a candlelight vigil for Leah in hopes that she would be found safe. With assistance from the West Virginia State Police, Huntington police conducted a search of Leah's apartment building, which included a bloodhound that was brought to the scene. According to the mysterious West Virginia YouTube channel, the bloodhound traced Leah's scent as far as the driveway before it abruptly ended. In the days following her disappearance, investigators discovered that Leah owned six jackets, one of which was unaccounted for, and when they checked her cell phone records, they discovered that there were no other incoming or outgoing calls from her cell phone except for the one call she made to her friend at 5:40 p.m. But this was about as much information as they had, because her cell phone was never accounted for. As police continued to search for Leah and conduct multiple interviews, her sister Jessica took to the media to get the word out about Leah's disappearance. On Wednesday, December 19th, Jessica was interviewed on MSNBC about Leah, and soon after, other national media outlets began reporting on the case as well. On this same day, December 19th, police canvassed Leah's neighborhood, searching abandoned houses and interviewing sex offenders in the area in hopes of finding new evidence, but law enforcement said the search did not yield any results. Shortly after this, hoping to generate some leads or encourage someone to come forward with new information, Leah's employer in Barbersville, the Dress Barn, announced a $10,000 reward for information on Leah's whereabouts. The next day, on December 20th, Jessica and Sergeant Williams with the Huntington Police Department appeared on CNN's Headline News with Nancy Grace. During the interview, Jessica stated that she and her sister would often leave the back door to their apartment open while they were doing laundry. She also mentioned that her sister struggled with a mild form of depression in high school, but that it was a temporary situation, and Leah had not experienced any depression-like behavior or symptoms in the months leading up to her disappearance. The following afternoon, on Friday, December 21st, Jessica appeared on MSNBC once again, continuing to raise awareness about her sister's disappearance, and again, asking for help and any possible information from the public. But there would be no need for Jessica to appear on any other media outlet after this, because by 8 p.m. that same night, Leah's family got the news they had been so terribly dreading, that Leah had been found, but she was not alive. Leah's father, Ron, explained to WSAZ3 how agonizing that week was for their family, wondering where Leah could be, pleading to God that she was alive and safe. And he recalled how devastating it was to learn that their worst nightmares had come true. Ron said, quote, "I found out on that Sunday evening, December the 16th, I believe, that Leah was missing. We just kept hoping and praying all that week that we would find her alive. And then we received the news on that Friday, the week after, that she was murdered," end quote. On Friday, December 21st, 1 week after Leah's disappearance, Huntington police held a press conference announcing that they had found a body in a crawl space of Leah's apartment building, which was located off the common laundry room in the basement. Although they didn't yet have a positive ID or confirmation that it was Leah's body, they firmly believed it was her. They said that her body had been wrapped in plastic and that she had likely been dead for the past 7 days since she first went missing on December 14th. Huntington Police Chief Skip Holbrook said her remains were found in a section of the crawl space that was not in plain sight. Rather, it had to be illuminated to be seen. Upon the discovery of Leah's body, which was confirmed to be her just 3 days later on December 24th, investigators got to work processing their now very active crime scene. Forensic units began scouring Leah's apartment building for clues and DNA as police quickly shifted their investigation from a missing persons case to a murder case. A couple weeks after discovering Leah's body, on January 10th, 2008, Huntington police held a follow-up press conference and revealed more details about Leah's murder. They confirmed that Leah had been strangled to death. However, there were no signs of sexual assault. At the press conference, Police said they hadn't excluded anyone as a suspect just yet, and they indicated that they believed Leah's murder was not a random act. Instead, they said the person or persons responsible had to be familiar with both Leah personally, as well as the layout of the apartment building. Police also said they would not be releasing any information about DNA test results anytime soon, since it was still a very active investigation and because they still had a lot of information and potential suspects to sort through. In the weeks and months following Leah's murder, police remained tight-lipped about their investigation and the details surrounding the crime. Although police continued to assure the public that it was still an active investigation, an official suspect was never named, even to this day. So let me take you through the limited timeline of information that police did give as they continued to investigate the crime. After 6 months of pretty much silence, in June of 2008, Huntington police confirmed to the public that the murder was still very much an open and active investigation. On June 13th, they indicated that they were waiting for some forensic test results to come back from the lab in hopes that they would provide new insight. However, 3 more months passed before Huntington Police Captain Steve Hall announced that they had a potential suspect in mind, although the name of the suspect was never revealed. In September 2008, Captain Hall said that in the past 8 months, they had been interviewing dozens of people trying to find answers, and he said one name in particular kept popping up. Hall said, quote, "It's an individual that we have contacted and have spoken to. However, this individual keeps coming to the forefront of someone we're particularly interested in," end quote. Hall also indicated that they were still waiting for DNA evidence to come back from an FBI lab in Arizona, which he said could take several months. However, Hall said the results could either lead to an arrest or they could clear the name of the person of interest altogether. Hall added that while a quick arrest would be nice, their primary goal was to secure a successful conviction. About a month later, on October 7th, 2008, police provided an update to the public and basically said they were still waiting for mitochondrial DNA to come back from the lab. They specifically stated that the lab in Arizona was one of only 4 in the United States, which meant it had a long list of cases and it was unclear when the results of the test would be returned. At this time, Huntington Police Sergeant John Williams said, quote, "We hope to have the results of the test soon, but while this is a high priority case for us, it's one of many for this lab. We're at the mercy of the lab before we can proceed much further into the case," end quote. Sergeant Williams also made it a point to stress that it was still not a cold case. He said, quote, "This is a high priority case and will remain as such. This case has not been put up on the shelf. It's still on my desk, and we act on any leads that come in," end quote. In this update to the public, Sergeant Williams went on to say that there are 3 things that help solve cases: confessions, witnesses, and physical evidence. At that point, 10 months into their investigation, he said that nobody had confessed and there were no known witnesses. Therefore, he said, quote, "The physical evidence is the only thing we have to go on. That slows up the process," end quote. However, police still did not release any name of any person of interest at this point, although they did confirm that they believed it was someone with quote-unquote close knowledge of the victim. Finally, Sergeant Williams encouraged anyone with information to come forward. He said, quote, "We want anyone with information, even if it seems small or trivial, to call us. I think some people assume the information they're holding is insignificant or that we already know it, but they may be holding key information," end quote. After this, updates about Leah's case were scarce and no new information was revealed until the following year in May 2009. And the information, well, it was incredibly disappointing to say the least, because the DNA test results had finally come in and the results basically got them nowhere. Huntington Police Chief Skip Holbrook announced, quote, "Mitochondrial DNA tests are complete, but the Leah Hickman homicide investigation remains unsolved despite the best efforts of law enforcement," end quote. Y'all, they had hoped that mitochondrial DNA hair fibers would identify the killer, but the technology was not advanced enough at the time to yield any results. So in other words, they would just have to wait for more advancements in DNA technology so they could complete more precise testing. Holbrook said, quote, "I can't emphasize enough that we don't recognize any case as being a cold case, and this is something that is a top priority for us. Outside assistance probably lingers as time goes on, but as far as forensic evidence, analysis, and technologies that are developed, those things are always important to an investigation. If you think about it, we are clearing cases now because of DNA advances that technology didn't exist 10 to 15 years ago. We've come a long way, end quote. According to the reporting of WSAZ3, DNA evidence can last up to 40 years for testing. But 2 years passed after Leah's murder, and Huntington police were still saying the same thing. In December 2009, police told the media that Leah Hickman died in a targeted attack carried out by someone familiar with the layout of the building. They said they had a working theory about the person's identity, but that they lacked sufficient evidence needed to prove guilt beyond a reasonable doubt. And essentially, that's where Leah's case is today, nearly 20 years later. Limited evidence and very few leads have long been the leading characteristics of the case, and the primary roadblocks in officially solving her murder. Although Leah's case fizzled out of the media for the next several years, it was briefly revisited in 2014 after someone spray-painted the side of Leah's former apartment building, leaving the words, "Who Killed Leah Hickman?" on display in bright red paint. According to the reporting of WCHS Eyewitness News in Charleston, it was a random act that happened on a seemingly random, non-significant date in April 2014. And apparently, police never said or revealed who was responsible for the message, or if it was even connected. Around the 10-year anniversary mark of Leah's homicide, in December 2017, Huntington Police released a statement which read, quote, "The Huntington Police Department wants to ensure Leah's family and the community as a whole that the investigation into the events surrounding her death and the person or persons responsible remains active. This case has also been reviewed extensively during the past years by various detectives in an attempt to allow a fresh set of eyes to review the facts and evidence that have been obtained. Any tips or leads received on this case always have been and always will be pursued vigilantly," end quote. The most recent coverage on Leah's case came in December 2021. Ron Hickman interviewed with WCHS Eyewitness News again and said that every year in December and around the holidays is always the hardest time. He said the holiday season was always Leah's favorite, and she had just celebrated her 21st birthday in November before she died. Ron said, quote, "It's the family gatherings and get-togethers this time of year. Several members of my family have passed away since this happened. It's just a very difficult time," end quote. And Ron also explained how hard it is to accept when there are very little answers. He said, quote, "It's a lot of just going through different things that could have possibly happened, just trying to look at all areas. It's a very difficult thing," end quote. To this day, Huntington police are still actively investigating leads as they come in, and they have not given up on their fight for justice either. If you have any information regarding the 2007 murder of Leah Hickman, please call the Huntington Police Department at 304-696-4420. You can also submit an anonymous tip at 304-696-4444. Okay, y'all, that officially brings us to the end of Chronicle 91. As always, be sure to check out my social media where I post photos associated with each case and episode. You can find me at Campus Crime Chronicles on both Facebook and Instagram. Okay, well, that's all for today, so bye for now. Campus Crime Chronicles is researched, written, and recorded by me, Nicole Turner, and it's edited and produced by Giari Gassaway. Campus crony Alexis McDonald is my research assistant. Tune in again in 2 weeks for the next Chronicle.